Red Business with IBEC, building a sustainable competitive future in Cork business.
Hi there and thanks for joining us. Coming up on this episode, we're going to speak to a woman who has dyslexia, who set up a business to help others with a similar situation. We're also going to hear about a company that's embracing a shorter working week. But for the most part, we want to bring you back to your college days. If you were a student in Cork in the 80s or 90s, then you're going to be a little bit green hearing about our next guest's project. It is a project called the Ashling House on the Bandon Road, €53 million put into it, and it really is the creme de la creme of new student accommodation. Des Reardon of Clancy Construction is the company behind it, and he's with us now. Des, how are you?
Very good, Jonathan. Good to be here.
Now, this is, first of all, a very, very expensive project, €53 million. Tell us a little bit about it, and sure, they're only students, Des. What are you doing giving them luxury accommodation?
They're the future, Jonathan. They're the future.
Well, I was the future once and they never gave me decent accommodation. But anyway, go on.
So, yeah, we started in the 18th of May on site 2020. The program was initially 28 months. Unfortunately, COVID hit just before we were to start and in between the construction. So it's 554 apartments set over 554 beds, student accommodation set over 77 apartments over five blocks, plus amenity space, it's coming to completion now in August. Gone really, really well amid Brexit and COVID. Really looking forward to handing over the project. The mock-up was inspected by the operator Nido at the end of January. Fantastic compliments, one of the best, if not the best, that they have inspected in their wide range of offerings throughout Europe. All good, thankfully.
Look, it's really a testament to endurance, the fact that you had so many challenges thrown at you during the course of the construction project. And they'll keep coming for all projects that are going forward. But it's the planning I'm interested in. You're talking about floor-to-ceiling windows. You've got ground floor cafes, real private space. Not, you know, you think student, you think boxy. This, to me, seems, it's almost out of kilter, doesn't it? Because you think pack them in, stack them in, squat them in, but that's not what you guys did.
It's not really, and I suppose it's down to the offering and the market that Nido are in with regard to the quality student accommodation. I suppose we would consider ourselves quite an innovative, agile company, Jonathan, and this was actually all done in light gauge steel. So while there was all concrete floors and concrete cores for the stair cores and the lifts, all the walls were light gauge steel made by a company, Horizon Offsite in Care. So all the walls were fabricated in a controlled environment in Care and then on a truck over here. I remember listening to you at a conference that you had remarked that part of the Mersey passed you on.
On the N7, that's right.
Exactly, yeah, and we're a part of that too, building the wards and operating theatres in the Mersey. But with regard to Bandon Road, it's very much, you know, built on a modular system with flexibility is how they like to market it. So it's you create great efficiencies by the whole stacking system on all the floors. There's a lot of upfront planning, but I think that actually creates a great deal of collaboration within the team. And then once it comes on site and you have all the obstacles out of your way, it's very, very fluid. You deal with a team of between six and eight people who actually built that with four cranes. So huge efficiencies, especially with COVID. You didn't have the multitudes of people in close spaces.
You're describing effectively a big Lego set. The way you're putting it together, a lot of it built off site, brought together, assembled on site, and then the labour comes in the finish.
Correct, and on top of that, you had the pods, which are the bathroom pods, which were put in the floors as they would be cast and the walls being built. The windows also went in there. So then by the time you were doing, let's say, a floor-to-floor cycle of 12 working days, you'd have your walls built, your pods in place, your windows in place. You were continuing on. So you can start your first and second fix MEP works. You can enclose your windows or enclose your floors, having them weather tight, and you can continue with your first fix of finishes.
There's one line I want to pick up. Has it 12 days floor to floor?
Correct.
So
correct.
In other words, you finished a floor within 12 days and you moved on to the next floor and the next floor above it. That seems incredible.
Correct, yeah. And every wall is structural. So basically your need for propping is minimal. So you have the freedom of movement. A lot of times with traditional builds, you will have your propping in place and that needs to stay until you're about three floors up. So your ability to actually do work within those spaces is heavily constrained. Your precision of tolerances is much improved, a lot less wet works. So there's a multitude of benefits, but the big one being speed and efficiency.
Co-living space has got a bad rap, and I know the government kind of moved against them then, but it's okay in terms of student accommodation because this is not their permanent home. This is where they live when they're studying in the university. Is that an advantage as well when you're putting together a project like this because it is a specific type of accommodation?
Definitely. You know, you've about 15 square metres of living space. So they have, as you said, floor-to-ceiling windows. You have your bedroom, you have your desk, you have your cupboard, you have your heater, you have your ensuite, and then you share between 5, 6, and 8 bed an apartment of circa 45 to 50 square meters with fridges, cookers, ovens, TV, again, floor-to-ceiling windows, and then an amenity space where you get to interact with colleagues. And it's perfect, really, you know. It's quality living in a fantastic environment.
Yeah, the only thing
overlooking
is
the lock.
Nobody does the cleaning. You have to do it yourself, I'm presuming. It's not the idyllic lifestyle where somebody comes in and does the cleaning in the meantime.
Well, you still would have, like, you know what I mean? It's run by a facilities management company. So there'd be obviously the common areas would be cleaned, but yes, you'd have to take care of your own bedroom.
Wash your cups, wash your socks. It's not rocket science. On the way we're moving, Cork, as we know, has a problem with apartments, that we haven't really had apartments started in the city since 2007. Student accommodation like this, particularly the type that you're talking about, is on stream and coming on stream. There's some great projects out there. The concern we would have, Des, is that it's going to be even trickier now to get projects off the ground, and you guys in Clancy Construction do a lot of this. You know, there's that report out during the week, the average cost of building a two-bedroom apartment increased by 14% since the start of the pandemic. Are apartments becoming further and further away, do you think, which is utterly tragic considering that they're so needed?
I would hope not, Jonathan. Like, I know there is a lot of concern and uncertainty out there with, unfortunately, the war in Ukraine. We've just finished COVID. Well, it's still lingering there, but more pressing things have taken its place. But I do sincerely think that we're in a really, really exciting time in the construction industry. I think it's a transformational period, but again, not without its serious challenges. But some of the initiatives that the government has announced, you know, the National Development Plan, the Housing for All, the Capital Programme, the Climate Action Bill, these are huge, huge initiatives with huge, huge funding. And for one of the first times, we have a kind of like a collective where everyone is on board. And there's a number of highly intelligent people heading up the likes of the construction sector group. We have the CIF led by Tom Parlin and our own local rep, Conor O'Connor, who are doing stellar work and always have. But I think COVID gave them a rightfully elevated platform and a much stronger voice. And I think with the industry leaders, the action and perception has been greatly enhanced and created a renewed value for our removed the obstacles or at least kind of, we'll say, drive through them to be a successful change, you
well,
know?
I have to say, congratulations on what is a fantastic looking project. I'd nearly want to become a student again to go in and have a look at it, but I'd
love you to come up actually and just to see kind of what we're about and
Do you know what? I'll get in there, Des, before the students ruin it, right? But in other words, look, well done on the project. Congratulations. Fascinating. 12 days floor to floor is incredible when you think about it. It's the Ashling House Complex on the Bandon Road. Des Reardon of Clancy Construction, thanks for joining us on Red Business, Des.
Jonathan, my pleasure. All the best. Bye-bye.
Red Business with IBEC, building a sustainable, competitive future for Cork business.
My next guest set up her own business in 2019 to help people like herself who'd been living their lives through the lens of dyslexia. Una Buckley was frustrated. She was anxious. She was bullied at school. Things that are very common for people who are dyslexic. But it helped inspire her to establish Blossom for Life. Una, you're very welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm very good, Jonathan. Thanks a million for having me on today. I'm delighted to offer any suggestions and advice to some of your listeners.
Is it hard still to say out loud that you have dyslexia? Because there was always a stigma that was attached to it.
Yeah, I suppose from child to child that will vary, and you know, from adult to adult that can vary greatly as to how comfortable they are with that disclosure element. There is a huge, you know, piece around that with having, let's say, this invisible different way of learning, or if some people categorise it as an invisible difficulty, that it can be very challenging to still disclose, particularly for employees now in large multinationals or in workplaces. It can be very difficult to do that. Myself, I kind of came to terms with it. I suppose I would have struggled with definitely saying it, you know, outright. I wouldn't, let's say, introduce myself, hi, I'm Una and I'm dyslexic, but I definitely have embraced it a bit more as I've gotten older, but that can vary greatly from person to person, and how it was ever presented to them first will greatly impact how they perceive their own different way of learning.
Because it is way more common than people think, isn't it? Like, the idea that only a small percentage of people are affected by dyslexia is a misnomer, because there are so many people out there who probably have elements of it. It's a spectrum in many ways, isn't it?
Completely, yeah. So there's about 10% of the population globally. They say in recent studies that there's about one in every three in Ireland classrooms at the moment, both at all levels, that have a different way of learning, ranging from dyslexia or to autism along that, let's say, scale. But it is very, very common, and it is very, you know, prevalent moving forward. And from society and evolution, there will be more and more students, let's say, that will gain under this umbrella label heading as we move forward.
So tell us a little bit about Blossom for Life. Where did the idea come from?
Yeah, so I suppose I'm now trained as a dyslexic assessor and specialist. As myself, I'm highly dyslexic, so I had many, many challenges in my own school and university background, and realised, I suppose, through many, many years of spending so much time doing homework and, you know, preparing for exams, that there was definitely, I suppose, an easier way to try and combat material and to learn things and retain information. So I generated some of my own strategies, you know, at a very young age to help get me through the system, and then realised, I suppose, as I got a bit older, actually this is something I would really like to help others do, and help kids, but adults and all across the age demographic, to help them move through their own milestones. So we personalised support for students of all ranges in age group and with all different learning difficulties. So we focus definitely on dyslexia, but we work with students with autism, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, to help them, you know, flourish and develop in a school setting, but also in a workplace setting.
That gives rise to my question. Is there an age limit? Do you know, do you have to be in school? Or do you have
there
to be an
not,
adult? Is
no,
it everybody?
Really, we would have, yes, we would have an awful lot of younger students. However, we work with an awful lot of adults and corporations and lecturers and teachers across the board as well. So there doesn't need to be any age limit. Once you have, I suppose, a different way of learning, you have it for life. So unfortunately, that mindset of when you just finish school, you're just supposed to, you know, cope on yourself in the world, can be very challenging for an awful lot of adults as well.
When you look now at the people that you're helping, is it fulfilling? Everybody who sets up a business wants it to have an impact and make a difference in people's lives. Okay, so, you know, everybody wants to make profit and put food on the table. But at the same time, I'd imagine your job is a bit more fulfilling than others.
Exactly. Well, I suppose I'm very passionate about what I do from my own background. I've had all the struggles. I can recognize the signs. And when I faced with a student that, you know, has an awful lot of mental health or anxiety issues, but also greatly struggles in school and at home, I can completely resonate with them. And thankfully, over time, we build that bond and build that link. And if that's as simple as, you know, them doing a small bit better on a spelling test, or, you know, them sitting their Leaving Cert exams, or whatever those milestones are for them, I'm very fortunate to then be included and in part of their journey of development. So it is very highly rewarding, very highly tasking at times, definitely, but very, very highly rewarding that I have been given a gift to be able to help others in this way.
When you look at the available market for your business, if you're saying 10% have some form, in some shape or form, that may have impacted their lives. Many people, it may not have impacted them at all, but some it really did. Like, there's a lot of people out there to help, isn't there? And there's potential for growth for businesses such as yours, Una.
Completely, yeah. I suppose a lot of people would come to us, Jonathan, and obviously they're unaware of services out there outside of school. They're unaware that there are specialised trained people that can help in certain areas. But there is obviously a huge mass market, obviously from an Irish basis, but obviously internationally as well as across the globe. Obviously people viewed pieces of information have to go through school, have to go through colleges, and often are left up to their own devices as to how they navigate through that. Some can manage well, and unfortunately others can, you know, lead down maybe an unhealthy path and hopefully can eradicate that as they get older. But there definitely is huge potential and scope to help an awful lot of people.
And a lot of potential out there that could be wasted if people don't access the right kind of help for them, which is why you set up Blossom for Life. If people are trying to contact you, how do they find you?
So we have our website page up at the over the last, I suppose, year and a half to 2 years, www.blossomforlife.com, where we provide an awful lot of suggestions and tips and resources for people. We did a lot of podcasts as well, actually, through COVID. And at the moment, we've created actually a free booklet for listeners. If they want to go onto the website, they click on our mailing list and input the details and they'll get the free downloadable booklet sent to them, where they can provide, you know, just tips and tricks at home or for teachers or for parents. If they're liaising with a student with a different way of learning, what can help them on the day-to-day platform to help them do that?
Well, it's Blossom for Life. It's the number four. So blossom4life.com.
It is. Thank you, Jonathan, for articulating that. Yes,
it's very important.
We set it up that way to link in with the maths element. So an awful lot of students with dyslexia might have dyscalculia, which struggles, you know, students will struggle with a maths element to their learning difference. So we said we'd put a number in just to be differentiate.
It makes sense as well. And look, if you Google it, it'll come up anyway, because they probably have it set up that way. Una Buckley, founder of Blossom for Life, thank you so much for joining us in Red Business, and the best of luck.
Thanks a million, Jonathan, for your time. Delighted to be part of the podcast.
Red Business with IBEC, building a sustainable, competitive future for Cork business.
Lots of businesses are working hard to retain very valuable staff that have given so much over the pandemic. Two firms on the Kinsale Road in the city have now pledged to give their employees the gift of time as they switch to a 32-hour working week. It's a trial basis, but an interesting one. Aisling Lee is head of HR and operations at Southern Tapes, and she's with us now. Hello, Aisling.
Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for having us on.
Good to talk to you. Before we get into the shorter working week thing, what do Southern Tapes do?
So we are a packaging company based up here in Fort Hill, as you mentioned. And I suppose we're a predominantly distribution company, and we are founded, I think it was 1984. So it's packaging. We do industrial, you know, the kind of sellotape, your bubble wrap thing. Well, we're hopefully moving away from all those things now into more greener products, but we started the food packaging then in 2009, and that was a slow and steady process of, I suppose, researching and developing compostable packaging, which we have, you know, moved on from even since then. It was a very slow, steady, I suppose, slog at the start. But thanks to hard work and a talented team over the last 13 years, it has, you know, turned into a reputable brand, you know, and I suppose we're kind of leading the way, I'd like to think, in the compostable packaging thing. So
yeah. It's a company that's evolved an awful lot, but by the sounds of it, you've a little bit of everything. You've got people working in the warehouse, you've got offices, you've got management, you've got people who are on the road.
Production even as well.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a little bit of everything going on, and everybody going at their own pace. How much of a shift is it to move from, I don't know whether you did a 39 or a 40 hour a week or whatever it was, back to 32?
So we did a 39 week, and Initially, we had kind of looked at the 4-day week scenario, but just with the nature of the business, we couldn't afford to close for a day. We didn't have enough staff, you know, with annual leave and things like that. So we kept kind of looking at it and parking it and then coming back to it and tweaking it. And then we realized that you could actually still go with the same concept of 32 hours, but spread it over 5 days. So we kind of, we played around with it for a couple of months, and I mean, we pieced it all together and what we hope will work. But it's not, so far, today's only day three, obviously, so it's very early days, and hopefully I'll be saying the same thing in a couple of weeks' time. But so far, so good. And everyone is, you know, I think everyone wants to make it work. So no one has complained or no one has.
Well, yeah, what did you say? Early days, yeah, you never know, there's always room. But how do you decide when they get the time back? Does everybody work 4 days, or do you choose your hours, or how do you make it work logistically? Because that's what I'm intrigued about.
So basically you kind of team up with somebody. So we have enough people in each department that you can tally with somebody. So we'll have someone who will do an 8 to 2:30 shift, and then we'll say if there's three people in one department, then we'll have someone coming in from 9 to 3:30, and then the third person will do the 10 a.m. to 4:30 shift, and that is when we close. So we open from 8 a.m. to 4:30. And there's a little bit of give and take, you know, if somebody wants to switch it, they can, you know, they can switch it up or rotate between them. Or if someone is off, you might, you know, stay a little bit longer on that day. But that was actually the staff suggestion as such, you know, because we wanted to hand it back to them and for them to come up with a way for their department to work so that they were able to have their say more so.
Yeah, it's 180-100 rule. Tell us what that means.
So it is 100% production for 80% of the time for 100% pay. So everyone is still, you know, it's kind of an opt-in. Contracts stay the same, nothing changes, but people have opted into this 32-hour week. So essentially, you are contracted to, you know, work for 39 and be paid for 39, but you can opt in to only work and be here for 32 hours.
Okay.
And obviously, productivity cannot drop. Then we're just going backwards.
Yeah, well, exactly. Then you're giving stuff away for free at that point. So but the one thing, Aisling, that struck us all about the pandemic was there was a fear amongst employers that all of a sudden staff are going to be sitting at home doing nothing. Whereas what actually happened in reality was people got more productive, that, you know, meetings happened on time. People were less stressed because they weren't sitting in their cars in traffic. I think that employers were pleasantly surprised when they started trusting their employees a bit more. I'm presuming it's the same logic behind this.
Do you know what, Jonathan? It's not that it's not. There was definitely an element of that. But it was actually Tony who owns the company. He had come up with this idea before the pandemic, not so much a 4-day working week, but he was always an advocate for working less. We never got further than that, but he felt that people work so hard. He noticed that people had very, I suppose, less time or little time to do things outside of work, you know, like getting to an appointment or getting to the bank. And especially if you maybe had kids, you know, and it was very hard to, you know, I suppose, get all the jobs done outside of work and have a personal life as well as a professional one. So we always toyed with the idea actually before the pandemic. And yeah, I suppose that's actually where it stemmed from. We could just never make it work. And we have a great team, and that was something that he always wanted to, I think it was rewarding the team as such. We have a very loyal team, and we're very lucky that they have been here for a very, very long time.
I'd imagine, Aisling, the key challenge is holding on to staff at the moment. And if the option is to move to a company that makes you work 39 hours and pays you for 39 hours versus a company that makes you work 32 hours, but you get paid for 39 hours, it's kind of a no-brainer, isn't it?
It's very attractive. I think a lot of companies are having difficulty retaining staff. I think it's a 2-year average that people stay in a role at the moment. But it's like we didn't have that, thankfully, but that is because we have genuinely, you know, it's actually true. We have a great team, and they've been here for so long. And the only roles that we've been hiring for are actually new roles in the company, which I did actually find it very difficult to fill.
Absolutely.
Initially.
Well, stick a big sign outside saying 32-hour working week. You'll be inundated, I'm telling you. Aisling, it's really interesting to hear all about it. Tell us what the website's for the companies if people are looking up Southern Tapes.
So, yes, it's stppackaging.ie, and we are working on the Down to Earth one at the moment. So That is downtoearthmaterials.ie as well.
Okay.
But the e-commerce site for STP is new, and that was launched, I think, just maybe 6 months ago. And, you know, we said we'd start small and just see how it gets on. And thankfully, you know, there's a lot of work that went into the back of it, and it is paying off. But because our opening hours actually haven't really changed a whole lot, we don't notice it. We didn't need them in place, I suppose, to implement the 32-hour week as such.
Wish you and all your colleagues the very best. Look, it's brilliant to hear about it in practice.
Thanks,
and actually working so far. But for now, thank you so much
great
for joining us.
Aisling, to you too.
Aisling Lee, Head of HR and Operations at Southern Tapes there. Really interesting. How many other companies are going to follow suit, do you think? That is it from this week's episode. Don't forget, Red Business in Focus is our video series with the local enterprise offices that is up right now on redfm.ie. Ciara McDonough is the producer of Red Business, and we will catch you on the next one.
Get the Red Business podcast every week with Jonathan Healy at redfm.ie and wherever you get your podcasts. Red Business with IBEC, building a sustainable, competitive future for Cork business.